And welcome back to the Learning Man podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. As you know, on the Learning Man, we talk about all different types of topics that specifically target men, and we discuss the topics that we don't necessarily feel comfortable talking about. On today's episode, we're going to be talking to Brian Chavez. Brian is a fashion designer based in Los Angeles. He specializes in denim and embroidery, and he outfits some of the top celebrities in LA. We talk about all types of things. He's been a good friend of mine for many years, and we're going to dive deep into substance abuse, what it's like to work as a straight man in a stereotypically female-dominated field. We're also going to be talking about his long, bumpy road that led to him finding his purpose in life. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is The Learning Man. And welcome back to the Learning Man podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. I am your host and your guide through this journey. I have a very exciting guest on today's podcast. I'm super stoked. You should be super stoked too, because this is an old friend. It's an old friend that's a new friend. We met during the pandemic on Instagram. We've been talking ever since, and we talk pretty regularly, and we have never actually met on camera before. Voice messages here and there, and that's pretty much about it. Now, today we've got Brian Chavez. He is the lead tailor over at Levi's Beverly Hills in Los Angeles, where he creates, you know, incredible one-of-a-kind embroidered garments. And he also has his own line of clothing. He's a fashion designer under the name Master and Naif, which is N-A-I-F. And you can find him at masterandnaif.com. And we're going to be talking all kinds of different things. And the name of today's episode is Sewing Like a Man, because that's what we're going to be talking about this evening. Brian, how are you doing?
What's up, man? I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, my friend.
Dude, it's so good. It's so good to finally see you, man. Because, I mean, we've been going back and forth for like 2 years, almost 3 years on Instagram.
Yeah, wild stuff, bro. But, you know, we kept cool. We always kept supporting each other, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm so grateful for you. You've always supported, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, I mean, it's kind of easy to support you. I mean, you do some incredible fucking work. So, I mean, it's kind of hard not to, you know, be a fanboy over here.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
So the story goes, Brian and I first met almost 3 years ago. And I actually totally stumbled on Brian's Instagram page not because I was looking for a cool jacket, but because I was a fan and I had just met Dante Basco at South by Southwest here in Austin, Texas. And, if you don't know who Dante Basco is, he's a fantastic actor. He played the iconic role of Rufio in the 1991 film Hook. And he's also in, you know, he's been the voice of Firebender. He's been the voice of, you know, all kinds of different animes and stuff. And he's a fantastic actor. I ran into him into a bar, and he was actually wearing the jacket. And
what, really?
Yeah, he was actually wearing the jacket.
you didn't tell me that, dude.
Yeah. And so we struck up a conversation or whatever. And, later that evening or whatever, I was looking through his Instagram and he had posted a photo of the jacket and tagged you. And that's how I found you.
Wow. Yeah. I've never heard of that story, dude. That's badass.
Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. And then you and I struck up a conversation, and then one thing led to another, and you know, here we are.
Yeah. And then you were doing a lot of photography. So we had that mutual,
I guess
artistic eye or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sure. Well, that, and I think one of our first conversations, I shared with you the story about how my grandmother was a seamstress and my grandmother was a seamstress, and she used to make, you know, her own, she used to come up with her own like patterns using, using like newspaper, like old newspapers and stuff. And she used to like make her own dresses, and she made dolls for every kid when they were born, and all kinds of stuff. And so
that's beautiful, man. That's old world right there.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, man. She was a pretty awesome lady, man. That's why I got her tattoos. My only tattoos are her name and the words "love you" in her handwriting.
Dude, your only two tattoos are just those of your grandma?
That's it.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. I love that.
For now, one day I'll get some more, but I'll have to join you in LA to do that.
Yeah, brother, we'll get one together, you know?
So we'll go ahead and jump into the questions.
All right, let's do it.
I want to be respectful of your time. I know you're super busy. So let's, I guess, kind of like jump into the two things that you do right now. So, you know, lead tailor at Levi's Beverly Hills in LA. What's that like? I mean, what's the day-to-day like there? Like, how did you get started there? How did you get started, getting into the fashion industry, like as a tailor? Like, what was your come up?
Oh, brother. Oh, man. There's a lot of stories in that one question. Do you want to go back to the beginning on how I started?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's take it from the top. Yeah.
Oh, all right. So I kind of ramble. So lead me in the direction you want me to go. But here we go. So I had just gotten back from doing a lot of crazy living in my early 20s, and I was doing a lot of traveling. There was a time where I was trying to go to the Marines. I was trying to go to the French Foreign Legion. No military service worked out. It was like God had his hand on me not to go to the military. So, and then I came back. I wanted to do skydiving. I got my first DUI, and then I stopped that dream. And then, so I had no dream to speak of. All I was doing was drinking, partying, and hanging out with friends. And then I got the bright idea to buy an RV and move to West LA to start working in a sushi restaurant and go to Santa Monica City College.
Wow.
The only reason I was doing that is because I absolutely had no destination in mind. But in high school, I did theater. So I was like, I really enjoy theater. Maybe I'll be an actor. I'll try that. It's LA. Maybe. So I started going to Santa Monica City College. I was just taking theater classes and working at the sushi bar and then living in my RV down by the beach. And honestly, dude, it was great. You know, I was just working, partying, and going to my one theater class. And
man, to be in our 20s again, bro.
Yeah, dude, man. Ugh. Crazy. But yeah, dude, so I was doing that. And then to be honest, I hated acting. I hated being up there. I hated memorizing lines. I just didn't like the process. But why I stood with it is because, to be frank, I was dating a lot and there were a lot of opportunities to go on dates. So I stood with it. I was a crappy actor, but I was having fun at the time. And then December rolled around, so that class ended, and then there was nothing else to take to get dates or get girls or whatever. So I was like, I saw a sewing class was open. I don't know why I took it. I don't know why, but I figured women are going to be in the sewing class. So I did it.
You got started in your life's calling by chasing girls.
Yeah, dude, chasing tail.
All right. So,
yeah, man.
Audience, gentlemen, if you start sewing now, you might be able to find yourself a girl. That's right. The love of your life. There you go.
Yeah. So, first day of class, I was like, had no interest in sewing. I didn't know about fashion. I didn't know anything about it. I just know what everybody knows, the dry cleaner sewer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I took this class, and then slowly but surely, I don't know why I started being attracted to the projects. And you start off A, Bs, and Cs, the rudimentary stuff. how to work a machine, what everything is, you know, very grammar school. And then instead of focusing on the women, I started focusing all my energies on these projects and I started having fun. And all my projects turned out to be really nice and they were being sewed perfectly to the everybody's praise. And then my teacher praised me and just everybody was so nice in that class. And the students were asking me for help to teach them. And
wow.
So I never started fashion for myself and I never continued fashion for myself. So I was teaching in this first class, my very first sewing class. It got to the point where the teacher was not really working because everyone kept coming to me. And it felt good because up until that point, I had nothing going for myself. So I remember the class was ending and then I was just going to go back to the theater class and just do the same thing, drink, party, and hang out with girls. And then my teacher pulled me aside and she said, she told me I was good at this. Have you ever thought about a future? And I kind of laughed in her face and I was like, no, I don't want to work in a factory because
because up until then, that's what
you thought. Yeah, no, because my mom wanted to be in fashion, but then her mom told her that us Mexican, like you don't want to work in the factories because they would just put us Mexicans in the warehouse. So that deterred my mom and she ended up going into interior design. But I remember her telling me that, and that's the only thing I knew about fashion. And then so I kind of laughed in her face. Her name was Miss Rain. I loved her. She was so cool. But she started to like say, no, you idiot. Like there's so much more. There's this, there's that. So she started enlightening me on this fashion world. And I kind of started to pique my interest a little, but I just progressed because there was nothing else. So she told me about LA Trade Tech in downtown. It's most people know of FITM in downtown. It's the ghetto school right next to it. I don't know if I should say ghetto, but you know, it's...
How far is it from Skid Row?
Maybe like a mile.
Okay, or so two. It's in the vicinity for sure.
Yeah, it's like literally in downtown. So, but you know, there was a 2-year program. I didn't graduate, and I found my first mentor after leaving Trade Tech. And then we started doing motorcycle wear because I was on motorcycles. Well, hold on. I feel like I'm okay.
Maybe. No, this is great.
Are you sure? Maybe yeah. Ask some questions to lead me back into.
No, this is great. No, I had no idea that you got started doing motorcycle wear.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we'll go back.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I had found my first mentor. He was an old Mexican man around 75. And he saw something in me, and he wanted to harness that, I guess. So I started working under him, and this guy was a master of his craft. He knew draping, he knew gowns, he knew the classical training of fashion, and he taught me all of that. And he was very rough, man. He was very disciplined and it wasn't easy. He was very militant. I worked with him for 2 years and pretty much every day I would just be at the sewing machine for 16 hours straight. If I wasn't sewing, I was designing. If I wasn't designing, I was pattern making, all under this gentleman. And we ended up, kind of taking off, you know, like I was into motorcycle wear. So I did a lot of motorcycle jackets, a lot of leather. And this man, he was connected in Mexico and he had a lot of connections. And in Mexico, man, you would find the beautiful leather. So we would go down to Mexico. We would get all like duffel bags of leather, come back. We would design the jackets and then we would sell them individual motorcycle jackets. And then we ended up getting a studio in downtown right next to Fashion District, right on Broadway. And it was beautiful, dude. But in partnerships, it's like a marriage and a relationship. We grew apart, and us growing apart got toxic, and that toxicity I had to leave. Mm-hmm. So that was my first business, and that business was called A Implements B. And I just walked away. I almost walked away from fashion. I walked away from that gentleman, and I took a break from fashion because at that time, my heart wasn't really in it. I was drinking too much. I didn't really care about fashion like I should have. I was mm-hmm. good at my skills, and I was good at what I was doing. But still at that time, I didn't catch the bug of fashion. I didn't really care. All I would do is just use it to buy more alcohol, you know, at that point. I would just use that. That was my job. That was my 9 to 5. I didn't care. I didn't design outside. I just did that.
So looking back, Brian, like looking back, and I know that, you know, we go through situations and at that time we feel a certain way about the situation, right? And then we grow, we mature, and we look back at those moments, right?
Yeah.
And we think about them differently.
Yes.
What, like, and I'll just be totally blunt. You said that you two drifted away. Do you feel like it was more his fault? Do you feel like it was something that you weren't bringing to the table that you could have done better? Or what was the situation?
There was a lot of situations, but this gentleman was gay, and I'm not gay, so he was a lot older and more experienced, and, you know, he had seen stuff, and the type of person I was at that time, I was very immature. I was very drinking just took over my life, man. And I'm at the time we did have our differences, and because of his age, because of our difference in culture, sexuality, just everything, we weren't compatible. And
you just didn't see eye to eye.
We didn't see eye to eye. And it got to the point that I love this man because he gave me gifts and skills that till this day, I like what he taught me is like 50 years worth of information.
Right.
Like 50 years of secrets, 50 years of mastery mm-hmm. and craftsmanship. And he taught me how to talk to clothes. He taught me how to just be one with the clothes. Like how crazy that sounds. Like,
crazy at all. I totally feel you.
Yeah, but it got to the point where my skills got to a point where I don't want to say I didn't need him, but the grasshopper became the master in my own right. So you can't have two masters in the same atmosphere.
You felt more comfortable with your skill set enough to be able to say, I can be a professional at this instead of an apprentice.
No, at that point, my mental state was so fucked up that I was almost done with fashion.
Okay.
Because at that point, I was drinking too much. I was getting hit on by everybody in the fashion industry. A lot of, you know, like where I was trying to work, a lot of my associates were trying to have sex. And I became jaded, dude. I became cynical in my profession.
Right.
And so I took a step back. I went back into serving in restaurants. And then I miss sewing, dude. It was months.
How long ago was that, roughly?
I'm 32 now. This was around 26, 27.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so I took off, dude. I literally had it in my mind that I was done with fashion. I was done with the toxicity. I was just done. My soul was dead at that point, dude.
Yeah.
And so I took a break. I went back into my just life of friends and just found myself again. Found what made me happy, got away from the stress. And then when I did that, I started to miss sewing again. You know, just the act of sewing, the machine. I've always been machine forward. Like, I love the machine. It turns me on, like just being one with the machine and all that. Mm-hmm. Like it gave me the same thrill as being on my motorcycle. So I started looking for jobs in fashion again. So I was like, okay, I think I'm ready. So I went in back into the field, kind of open-minded. I knew I didn't want to go back into the garments I was creating, the fabrics I was using, because it was all delicate. Because when I was designing with this gentleman, it was half his line, half my line. Mm-hmm. So it was like my aesthetic with his, and his was like ball gowns and crazy red carpet gowns. So it just wasn't me, dude. And so when I came back this time, I was like, what is me? And right. Denim has always been in the back of my mind. And so I found this one job ad, and there was one picture, and it was a shop. So I was like, man, that shop looks pretty badass. I'm going to go. So I called the guy. He was like, yeah, come on down. I'm like, okay, cool. He sounds like a cool guy. You know, I talked to him on the phone. So I got on my bike and drove on down to Santa Monica. I was living in East LA at the time. So this gentleman, he had a shop. His name was Robert Rifkin. And he had a shop called Rough Cut. And again, he was an old man. He was probably about like 75. But this man was an old Jewish man. And he was rough around the edges. And it was just like a totally different world, dude. I walked into his shop. And then there was rock and roll music playing. I think it was Rolling Stones. There was brick everywhere. There was rock and roll posters. There was guitars. The machines that this Robert had, it was just like I was a kid in a candy store.
Like all the classic machines that are.
Well, yeah, dude. Yeah, because like to put it in kind of put it in perspective, one pair of jeans, like let's use Levi's as an example. A pair of Levi's, it takes like 13 to 12 specialty machines to make one pair of jeans.
Really? I never knew that.
So yeah, you have one machine that does the bulk of the work, and then you have all these specialty stitches, specialty buttons, specialty everything. And because of specialty, each of them get a machine. So Robert had every machine that you could dream of. He had rare machines that used to fabricate the old vintage Levi's from back in the day before all those vintage machines went to Japan. So this guy was legit. And like, he hired me on the spot, dude. And at that time, I didn't know anything about denim. I had no clue. I knew that it was hard. I knew that I wore it. And I knew that my grandma bought my jeans at Macy's or JCPenney's. Mm-hmm. You know, that was it, dude.
Well, so, that's better than me because, you know, my grandma bought mine at fucking Sears because they were the only ones that carried the Husky section.
Hey, I bet you look great in them, dude.
Those old school rustlers, baby.
Hell yeah, cowboy. But where were we? Yeah. So this and what this guy's shop did was literally everything denim related. So his main business was made to measure bespoke denim.
Wow.
So
made, literally made for the person that they're meant to be on.
Exactly. Yeah. So before I knew what bespoke denim was, before I knew that Levi's did their own program of customization, before everybody, before I knew anything about anything, denim, salvage, anything.
Wow.
Yeah, I learned it all here. And it was like, dude, it was like a playground because it was just him and I. Like before me, like this gentleman helped start the brand Redone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he was had a lot to do with Redone. And I had came right after all that. And I won't get into that because that's a whole different story. But
right.
Yeah, so it was just him and I. And then it was great. You know, he was like my father figure in fashion at that time because I needed that. I was coming from being cynical, from being jaded, from being taken advantage of, from being hit on, you know, from just this guy was who I needed at the right time. Mm-hmm. And he took me under his wing. He showed me everything denim. And if anybody knows denim, you know that it's a country in itself. It's a language in itself. It's a society in itself. It's a subculture. It's like, it's crazy, man. But so
you just basically fell in love with the fabric at that point.
I fell in love with everything. I finally found where I was supposed to be at that time in my life. Mm-hmm. I was working with the right fabric. I was working with the right mentor. I was working in the right shop, the right area. And then this was my first intro to the west side, you know, the west side of things. And from the west side of fashion to downtown, you know, it's a big difference. So it was learning that customer, it was learning that aesthetic, that demographic, that, yeah, it was just learning everything, dude. It was such a great experience, and it was such a great school of denim that I was so blessed that he took me under his wing. And he started me at the end when I was at the beginning. And then when I got into Levi's, I was already like, I didn't know what I harnessed as far as knowledge, but dude, man, I had worlds of knowledge already.
So at that point, you know, I guess for what, the last 2 years you've been over at Levi's as the lead tailor?
No. Yeah. So in between that shop and Levi's, I was supposed to take over that shop, and then I ended up getting in my motorcycle accident, dude. And then that changed things a lot. And then at the same time, I was working at that shop, and then I was working at Levi's, and I got in the accident, and I ended up walking away from Robert because he was getting ready to retire anyway, and
right.
it just worked out that way.
Right.
So I had let his shop go and that opportunity go because of the motorcycle accident. And during the motorcycle accident, because I had already got in hired by Levi's, like Levi's really stepped up, and I think I was only working for them a month. And then I got in this almost death-defying motorcycle accident. So they had every right to just let me go because I hadn't proved myself yet. I hadn't shown them anything. It was just like a month into it. And I got like I almost died. Mm-hmm. And then that's the beginning of my Levi career and my that. So,
wow.
Yeah, man. But
so Levi's, they take care of you. They stuck with you during that time.
They stuck with me through a lot of times, actually, you know, a lot of dark periods of my last 4 years of my life.
Yeah.
So.
So and we'll get back to that. Let's put a pin in that because I definitely want to revisit that. But, you know, going back to one of the things you said earlier, you know, you you got into the business to chase girls, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, right? You signed up for the home ec class just so you could learn, you know, how to talk to women, and you ended up learning how to bake, right? So
no, yeah. Not learn how to talk to women, just hit on women.
Okay,
dude.
Well, you know, all right, fine. I watched Roger Dodger last night with Jesse Eisenberg, and that's the first thing that came to mind, you know, figuring out how to talk to women. So, you know, I think it's also really interesting because, you know, when I think of somebody who works with material and thread and a needle, I think of a woman, right?
Yeah.
I automatically think of a woman, and I probably have it imprinted in my head because I, you know, spent so much time being poked and prodded literally by my grandmother, you know, when she was, you know, making me clothes and making me, Halloween costumes and all that kind of stuff. Halloween, by the way, was her, like, that was her Super Bowl, man. Like,
Halloween?
Oh God, yes. Like, is she my, I don't know if you know this, Brian, but my mom is the theater director.
No, you never told me that, dude.
Yeah. I grew up on the stage as well. And, yeah. And so my grandmother was the costume maker for all of my mom's plays and stuff.
What?
Yeah.
That's badass.
And so, but even going back, you know, super young, like Halloween, our town, little small town in South Texas, population 5,000, name of it is Foul Furious, right? Foul Furious, Texas. And
this is a badass name.
Yeah. The Fast and the Foul Furious.
Hell yeah.
And so, yeah, man. And so, like, growing up, like, in our town, Halloween used to be a really big deal. And my grandmother, and every year that they had this this costume contest, and man, that was my grandmother's Super Bowl. I'm talking, like, she started, like, cutting patterns, like, in, like, July, started fitting us, like, getting everything ready by August, making the final touches by September, so that way they were ready to go in October, man. Like, she was serious about this shit. And she was like, you know, she was like, I'll be damned if we're not going to win this year. like she was serious, dude.
Mama's winning this year.
Yeah. she was all in, and she made, like, she used paper mache. She used, like, leather. She used, like, all incredible stuff. Right.
Was she self-taught?
Yeah. From Great Depression.
Jeez, yeah. That's badass.
Yeah. And so that was her big thing, right? So, like, I have this idea in my head that, you know, that women are, you know, they are tailors, they are, the seamstresses, they, you know, and then I think of, okay, well, let's go a little bit further back and let's look at, you know, old school, like, golden era of Hollywood. And then I start thinking of, the tailors, the costume makers of that period. And I automatically think of Ori Kelly, who is, you know, this, you know, flamboyant, like, costume, you know, world famous costume designer that worked, you know, with Marilyn Monroe, that, you know, outfitted Rita Hayworth and Ginger Rogers. And he worked on Some Like It Hot and all that. And the Maltese Falcon, Casablanca, all that stuff. And I think him, and he was like this over the top, flamboyant, like he made it cool to be gay when it was not socially acceptable to be gay. Right. Yeah. He was just that type of person, unapologetic, you know? And, you know, so I automatically think, okay, well, it's either a woman or it's a very gay man. Right. And so, very gay man, you know, but very, you know, nothing wrong with being gay. I'm just saying, like, that's just the imprint that I have in my head. And here you are saying, no, I got into sewing because I wanted to go after the girls. So, like, what do you see in the fashion industry in terms of, like, being judged or automatically, like, do people assume that you're gay when they first meet you, like, just because of your craft? Or, like, do you ever have to go through situations like that?
Yeah, let's just put it out there. Everyone assumes I'm gay straight from the jump. And like everybody assumes I'm gay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, even before fashion, dude, I would wear some crazy weird stuff because I was like a metalhead. I was a rocker. So I had my long hair. I had my tight pants. You know, no underwear showing my waistline. You know, it's like weird stuff, dude. Mm-hmm. Leather jackets with fringe. But I just did it because, you know, my inspiration were like metalheads and rock stars. Mm-hmm. So.
Which if you follow any 80s hair music, yeah, absolutely. That's where you got it from.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, man. That was me in high school and everything. So everybody just assumed I was gay from way back when, man. It was weird. It was just like something I had to always say, no, I'm straight, by the way, to every, like, even my girlfriends, like every girlfriend I had, they first thought I was gay until I had to like, no, I'm not gay. I promise. You know?
Yeah.
So it's just, and then when I got into fashion, it just obviously it a hundredfold, you know, now everyone just
magnifying glass on it.
It magnified the assumption. Yeah. So at this point, you know, I don't care. I've been comfortable with who I am for a while now. It's never affected me. It's never hindered my girl getting. It's never hindered what I do. If anything, it's a good conversation starter because it's a good conversation starter. You know, they find out I'm not gay and they're shocked. And then... So it's just, I don't know, dude. It's always been a thing for me. They always assume I'm gay.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes for like a good, like, you know, first date, you know, kind of, you know, break the ice kind of thing. Yeah. Oh, what do you do? Oh, you know, I'm a marketing manager. Okay, cool. What do you do? I'm a seamstress. What?
He's totally gay.
Yeah, I would totally use that. I would say I'm a seamstress. like not a... Not a tailor. No, dude,
yeah. People are so flabbergasted at like, it's always like the people, oh, you're not old, you're not gay, you're not a woman, you're not this. And it's like, no, I'm just me. But I feel like everyone has the craziest assumptions in sewing,
yeah.
You know, because I could think back of what my thought process was. All I knew about was my grandma sewing like you and the dry cleaner that did hems. That's all I knew.
Right.
So now I like that I could remember that because I teach my clients. I don't just, they're not my clients. They're my students. They're my clients. So I could, it turns me on when I could teach my client basic stuff.
Right.
So yeah. And I think everybody should know basic stuff. Just like basic cooking, basic stuff like that, you know? It's beautiful.
Yeah. And you know, like to your point, don't feel bad. All right. Cause you know, my partner, she thought I was gay the first time she met me. Cause we both worked at the same ad agency and, I actually struck up a conversation as we were making coffee, you know, because I'm a big coffee snob and she had noticed that I wear like, I would dress nice. Like I was put together, you know, I enjoy being put together. I enjoy like old school, like fashion. And I enjoy like, you know, I like to smell good, look good, feel good, that type. And she automatically, I'll never forget it. The day she has a story, the day that we met, I was wearing a pink button down shirt and black slacks.
Hell yeah.
And I remember like I'm the type of guy who's like, okay, the belt has to match the shoes and the belt and the shoes need to be polished and you need to look like you're put together and you need to have like, you know, the hemline needs to be in the break of the inseam needs to be perfect on the shoes and stuff like that. And so like, when I dress up, I know I'm like in a t-shirt and, you know, ball cap right now, but when I dress up, I like to look good, you know, cause you feel good.
Yeah, you look good, you feel good.
Yeah, exactly. And she was like, oh, this guy's definitely gay. And it's just like...
My gaydar is going crazy right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we had this inner work chat. We had this inner, like, inner company chat or whatever. And I said, you know, hey, really enjoyed a conversation, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, at the coffee maker, blah, you know, something like that. After we parted ways. Do you want to go out and do something some night? And she said, oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, that would be fun. What do you want to do? And I said, and then I thought to myself, or what, she goes, oh, you mean like a girls' night?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to run with this. So I responded back and I said, yeah, we could totally do like a mani-pedi. It'd be so much fun, you know, like, and I just kept going with it. And then I just stopped and I said, you thought I was gay, didn't you? Like, and she was like, you're not.
Yeah. Let's go shopping. Let's totally hang out.
Yeah. And so that's how we ended up getting together. So
that's a good story, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I totally get that. Did you ever, when you were working with that, the 75-year-old Mexican man,
uh-huh.
Did you ever feel like he was trying to, like, take you under his wing and teach you because he was interested in you? Or was it, like, were the lines, like, very, you know, were they very drawn in the sand at that point?
No, because, you know... In any kind of field where somebody is more powerful than you,
right,
more knowledgeable than you, just has more power than you, it's just, in my opinion, never a good idea, because even if there's a power struggle always, and
right.
I'm the type of person that I've never liked to be controlled or anything. And what I did feel, again, I don't know if it was as a adult council figure trying to get my life in order, and maybe he thought he was the hero of my life, or there was some other motive. I don't know. I'm just going to like say that I was really fucked up in the mind at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, just, I don't know. I just had to leave. My soul had to get out of that predicament. And yeah, I just couldn't stay in that relationship anymore, whatever you [S2] Right. [S1] Want to call it. It did get really dark a little bit, and where we just stopped communicating and
[S2] Right.
It just wasn't what it was used to be. And I don't know. Looking back, I have nothing but love for the man, but it's just, all I could say is just that power, when there's such a power difference, and if it's not your parent, or if it's like, it's just never a good idea, in my opinion. Like, you're taking a chance with, you know, like your safety, you know, and, I don't know. It's just the power difference. It's never good.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. And then the, you know, the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, going back to your motorcycle accident, right?
Yeah.
So effectively, like, you've cheated death twice, which, like, I don't know a whole lot of people that can say that. Like somebody is looking out for you. Can you talk about what those experiences were? You know, you mentioned a little bit about your motorcycle accident previously, but can you tell that story and then also share a little bit about the next time that you were kind of faced with that?
All right. Okay. So let's see. Let's go back to the first month of Levi's. All right. So I had just gotten hired to open up the first tailor shop in Los Angeles. At this, I don't know what your knowledge is as far as the tailor shop goes, but 4 years back, like, I think it was only like in San Fran, maybe New York, maybe Paris, you know, like very selective areas. So at this point, I didn't even hear about the tailor shop. Like, it was very under wraps. It was not a thing. So, I got in there, I got hired obviously. And then, it was ground zero, two machines, little box of a tailor shop. It was just like bare bones. Like, I was coming from, not, I told you my,
not what you would expect Levi's no. to have. Yeah.
No, dude. Yeah. So like I said, I came from Rough Cut, the shop I was doing bespoke denim. And I was used to that machine, those machines, that level of creation, you know? And then the whole tailor shop concept was just new for me. It was a tailor shop concept. It was tailor altering. It was light customization, light embroidery, you know? And at this point, I didn't know what the hell chain stitch embroidery was. I didn't know anything, dude. I just knew how to work on denim, and I knew my life from Robert in denim. So, yeah, first month was really weird. I remember before the accident, I was kind of teeter-tottering, leaving Levi's or staying, like staying or going. Because I remember thinking like, wow, like this, at the time I thought it was a step down because I wasn't, it was like two machines.
Right.
And I was in the middle of a retail shop. So it was like, I was just out of my element, dude. And at the time, there was too much action because picture like a bartender, but in the middle of a store working on jeans, or a sushi chef working right. on jeans in the middle of a store.
Gotcha.
So I was coming from this old Jewish man, just him and I. Like, he was my partner, I was his partner, and I would just talk to him all day, every day. So I got to this Levi's and Promenade, Santa Monica, and it was out of my element. So, yeah, I was like, Brian, stay with it. You know, this is Levi's. I remember I wanted to working for Levi's all along because, you know, that is the pinnacle. They created the first jean. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what, let's see what happens. And then, so I stuck it out, and then it was gradually getting better. I started making friends. And I ended up staying for a little while more, and then a month passed, and then we had this crazy event where Snoop Dogg was DJing for a party. It was some kind of event. So it was pretty cool. And this is when he was Snoop Lion DJing, at the Promenade, and then, my tailors and I were just customizing. It was a crazy event, real fun. But after the event, I had started drinking, like, because I was having fun, man. I was started drinking. And then stupid me, I thought I could drive. And I got on my motorcycle. Long story short, I was on the 10 freeway. It was about like 12 or 1 a.m. in the morning. And then I don't remember because I blacked out from the impact. But I woke up in the ER, barely coherent. I didn't know what was going on. Long story short, I got ran over by one car on the 10 freeway. And then my body went tumbling and rolling. My motorcycle went ahead of me. And then another car came right behind me and ran me my lower torso, my hip to my knee to my ankle all over. And then that did the job. And then what had happened was a car that was behind the second one that ran me over saw all this and stopped. And she and her boyfriend stopped the whole 10 freeway to save my life.
God.
So yeah, if it wasn't for this couple, like, I probably would have just been roadkill. Like on the 10 freeway, because it was dark, it was pitch black. I would have been continuously ran over probably, dude. So this couple saved my life. And then Okay, I go back into the free, I wake up in the hospital. I'm at Ronald Reagan, UCLA, in Westwood. And then I'm just like, I don't know what happened. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what's going on.
Did they halo fly at you, or what did they do? Like, I mean,
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know, because I was by myself. Like, my family wasn't with me. Nobody was with me. And I guess it was the ambulance that just dropped me off, I'm guessing. But yeah, I stood a couple of days in the ER because they called me Red Man. And I guess Red Man means like you're almost a goner. So I guess they named me Red Man on the ER. And then, yeah, so that was my first accident with the motorcycle. And subsequently, I ended up getting all five surgeries after the initial running over. I got a nice DUI too. I had some jail time from that incident. The whole process.
So it wasn't enough that you almost died and you got run over twice. Like, the system made sure that they after you recover from this, we'll see you. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, dude, it was fucked up because I went to county when I was limping, and so it was scary, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I had to walk right when I went to county, but yeah, it was from that accident, drinking and driving on my motorcycle. Man, it took a lot out of my life, you know, it took a lot from me. But Levi stood with me. They didn't fire me. They didn't let me go. They let me work with my broken limbs. They let me work with when tubes were into, you know what a PICC line is?
I don't.
A PICC line is when you come, because my blood was contaminated from the surgeries. So you have to get this antibiotic continually being pumped into your heart valve. Mm-hmm. And it's called a PICC line. And how it works is they get this tube and they inject it into your arm close to your heart. Mm-hmm. And it is continually in your body. And this tube is hooked up to a big old regulating machine. Mm-hmm. And it regulates my antibiotics into the tube, into my arm, into my heart. And I've had it twice from the motorcycle. But yeah, like Levi's, they let me work with my broken legs, with crutches, with canes, with my PICC lines in. Yeah. It was pretty cool because like people started to know me for the cane and the tailor with the broken legs. So it was just a weird time, dude. It was a weird time. But yeah,
I mean, to your point though, you did have a pretty cool cane.
Oh, dude, the Bubba stick. It's out of Texas. my dad is a yard sailor, and he found a big that Bubba stick. It's called Bubba stick. The company.
Yeah.
Look them up. It's out of Texas. Amazing. Brass knobs. Yeah. Badass handles.
Yeah, like I don't know why you still don't walk with it, because that thing like you could start some shit with that cane, dude.
No, dude, yeah, it's a beater. Yeah it's like
for
sure. It's like a nightstick. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you, daddy, for that that cool stick. But yeah, and then yeah, that was the motorcycle accident, man.
God, are you originally from Texas?
No, I'm from East LA. There's a small city called Pico Rivera.
Okay.
Mainly Hispanic city, you know, like 15. Oh, you do?
Yeah, I know. I know Pico Rivera. Oh, okay. Really well.
What?
Yeah, I spent some time there, man.
What the hell? You never told me all these stories.
I know, dude. Because, you know, usually we have to talk in like 140 characters. So, you know, but yeah, like when I was working with the agency, with one of the agencies I was with, I was working on Tequila Cazadores and Budweiser Bud Light, and they are not sponsors of this podcast, by the way. So if you know anybody over there, hook a brother up because I need
come
some sponsors.
On, man.
and so Pico Rivera was like one of our primary like areas because we focused on Spanish dominant consumers.
We love our Bud Light, dude.
Yeah. So yeah, did the rodeos over there and did the did all those different types of events. Yeah. And very familiar, man. It's a good part of town, man.
It's interesting. Yeah. It was a cool little town to grow up in.
Yeah. That is cool. And so, okay. So that was the first accident. And then, you know, you had to do, you know, probably pay fines, and getting a DUI is not cheap. Been there, done that. I feel you, man. And so afterwards, like the second time, you were in the process of recovering from that first accident, right? And then you had another situation.
Yeah. So what went down was, let's go back to last day of working before everybody went into quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was at Promenade, working at the tailor shop. I had just gotten word of a promotion because at the time I was just tailoring, but I was an elite tailor at Promenade. So I was just tailoring, doing my thing. But they were going to open up this new store, which I'm at now. It's in Beverly Hills, but incorporated Century City. So they were going to open up this new Levi's store in Beverly Hills at the Westfield Mall. And they wanted to give me that tailor shop. So I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like, yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it. Like, it was such a cool offer. So I was like, I was jazzed, man. I was excited. And then let's see, maybe another week or two, we start hearing about the Corona 19 virus. We start hearing about China. We start hearing about all this weird stuff going on. And then, so the word got spread. We got told to shut down, and then we left home. And that was the last day I worked at Promenade on Santa Monica. We closed up shop, we left, we bounced and went home. And up until then, that was March. And then I think I was living life just with my girlfriend at the time. We were living in our apartment, and then I had my work studio in Koreatown. So I was living in Echo Park on the other side of downtown LA, and then I had my work studio in K-Town. And I wasn't driving at the time because of my accidents and because I had a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
So I was busing, metroing, Ubering, okay, with my cane and my crutch and all that. But to be frankly honest, all I did was just party, dude. And I didn't party. I was just drinking like everybody was, I think. Mm-hmm. And I just got another dark period for me. And then it was this one night I got in a bad fight with my girlfriend, and I had left and then I was making my way towards my workshop in Koreatown. I was just gonna like blow off some steam, work the night, and then I needed that. I needed to work. So I hopped on the metro just like I was going to work. And at the time, you know, this was before the BLM riots. This was before any riot. This was probably when George Floyd had just died, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing happened. So I was just everybody was home chilling. So in my mind, I was just like, I'm gonna go to my studio. I'm gonna work. That's it. Call it a day. Maybe sleep there. That's it. Long story short, all hell breaks loose. World War III breaks down, and there's fires. There's it's just all hell breaks.
Oh, that's right, because that was in Koreatown, right? Were well, the sta- it was ever,
like
well,
LA the, was burning.
Yeah, but wasn't the there were standoffs and snipers and all kinds of shit in Koreatown, right?
That was the first riot in like 90s, I think. I don't know if they did that this time. Maybe they did. But I was coming from downtown, so there's a lot of underground metros there. And the staircases are like maybe like 20 to 30 flights. It's like epic staircases and they're asphalt. So what ended up happening was I was on I was pedaling around town trying to get to my bus because I didn't know what was going on, but it was chaos. There was people running. It was scary, man. And then people were breaking things. So I was just like, crap, I don't need to be here. If things went down, I can't protect myself because, you know, I'm healing. So not, I was just
not,
like,
not even with the bully stick.
Well, dude, like, if I lean too much on my leg, like, I would just buckle and fall.
Okay.
So my cane, like helped me at this point, man. It was my leg. So I was like, oh shit, what the hell is happening? Like, I don't know what's going on. I can't protect myself. I need to get out of here. I don't think an Uber is going to pick me up right now because there's some shit going on right now. So let's go to the underground. Let's hop on this metro and let's get out of Dodge. And then again, I wake up in a pool of blood. And then I'm like, what the fuck happened? And I'm just like touching my face.
This is like late at night, right? So you're coming home from the bar essentially and this shit happens or?
No, everything was closed, dude. So. Okay. At the time I got in a fight with my girl. I had went to my dad's house just to blow off some steam early day. And then I was just like, I'm not going back home. I'm going to go work because I need to work. I shouldn't be home right now. So because I chose to go to K-Town, I wound up in this predicament.
God.
And so I'm in the metro, right? I'm trying to get to the staircase. And then as I get to the staircase, I take a tumble. But it was, I got nudged, dude. I don't know what happened. I just wound up on the floor of the metro. And then I wake up and I realize people are running. I'm fucked up. Adrenaline kicked in. I need to get up. At this point, adrenaline picked me up. It got me to the metro. It got me to my work studio. And that's the last thing I remember. And then to be frank again, I woke up in the middle of the night and I don't know if I should say this, but I soiled myself because I tried I couldn't get up, dude. Like I remember waking up and everything hurt. Like there was pools of blood in my eyes from, cause I had I didn't know all of this at the time. I just woke up from my studio because when I got in my studio from getting there, I passed out from the pain, I guess.
Yeah.
So I woke up. I don't know if it was from the pain or from soiling myself, but I was like, fuck, this sucks. And then I was like, okay, let's get up and clean myself. So at that point, I tried to get up and I was like, oh my God, I can't move. Like I couldn't move my everything hurt, dude. And I didn't know what was going on. I hadn't felt this pain. Like even the motorcycle, there was nowhere near this pain, dude.
Yeah.
And then so at where my work studio was at the time, it was in a big warehouse and it was open 24 hours, but nobody was there at nighttime or like in the early morning, really. So I was fucked, dude. I woke up like at 4 or 5 and I couldn't get up. My phone had broken. I lost everything. I was soiled. There was pools of blood in my eye. I looked like Carrie because my whole face was bloody. I was soiled. Like everything was terrible, man. And then let me know if you can hear me. My phone's dying. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. And then So I was scared, man. I started to cry. I started to cry out to God, and I just didn't know what to do, man. Like, I've never experienced that. I felt like a paralysis of pain. And then I ended up having maybe 60% of strength in my left arm. I guess that was the only limb that didn't get messed up that bad.
Right.
It was still hurting, but I was able to pull myself up. And then I had this little go-kart thing for my machines. So I threw myself on it, and then I just like kind of pitter-pattered to the bathroom. And then I tried to clean myself off. I tried to clean the blood out of my hair and my eyes and the dirt. It was just bad, dude. I cleaned the major mess, and then I pitter-pattered back to my studio, and then I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. So I was on the floor. I was like, Lord, I don't know what to do. I was like, God, if you're there, please help me. And then I just cried. And then I just hear like maybe a half hour later, like a person. And then I'm like, help, help, please. And then she heard me, thank God. And then she came. Think she was scared out of her mind because it was just her and I, and then she saw a bloody guy with, you know, like, yeah, like a fucked up guy. And then she, thank God, she stood there, and I was like, please don't leave, like, help me. And she was like, okay. So she helped me, and she, man, that was like an angel, dude. So she was able to call me a cab, and then she had paid for it because I had nothing, dude. I lost everything. And then this cab, he didn't want to take me because I looked bad. And I was like, please, sir, like, please take me. Like, I'm begging you. So he was like, fine. So he put.
I promise, Mr. Cab driver, I will not die. Like,
no,
like,
seriously. Yeah, that was like, it, dude.
He didn't want to be liable.
Yeah, no, because and then I just started crying again. Oh, and I guess I pulled at his heartstrings because he was about to just take off.
Yeah.
And then he took me home. And then at the time, my girlfriend, I knocked on the window. She opened the door. She screamed because, again, I was bleeding. Like, the blood wouldn't stop coming out of my face. And then I just imagine, you know, you're a girl. Someone's knocking at the window, and then this bloody face just says, hey, babe, you know. So she picked me up. She helped me out. And then I should have went to the hospital, dude. But at this point,
you didn't go to the hospital for this?
Dude, I couldn't. I physically couldn't. Like, I should have called the ambulance because I couldn't move.
Yeah.
But at this point, I didn't. I just wanted to be home in a safe space. And so I was like, baby, please don't call the ambulance. I don't think anything's broken. And then she was like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I don't think anything's broken. And then so I went to sleep. For like 3 days straight. But before I went to sleep, I was like, Lord, if you take me, see that I go to heaven because I'm ready to die because my rib cage and my whole torso, I don't know what happened, dude, but I couldn't breathe. Like, it felt like everything was ruptured inside me. I've never felt pain like that before. And so, yeah, my girlfriend, she cleaned off the rocks and pebbles, the blood that she could, like the coagulation. And then I went to bed. I woke up 3 days later, and then I was like, oh, I feel a lot better. I feel a little better. And then I woke up, and then I looked at my arm, and it was like Popeye. It was a Popeye arm. It was like 10 times bigger than my normal arm. And then it would scare the fuck out of me, dude. And then I fucking cried again.
So the blood was pooling in your arm.
Yeah. So I woke up. It was already nighttime. And then I didn't want to go to the hospital. The only reason I went is because my arm got crazy huge. So my girlfriend and I were like, yeah, we should go. And then so we went to the hospital. And then, yeah, it turns out I shattered my kneecap. I snapped my ligaments. My elbow cap it totally busted. So when they fixed it, they put my cap into a little disc, like a puzzle piece. There was a gash in my head that they couldn't close up because I waited 3 days, so it had to heal by itself. I don't know. It was just, yeah. So again, I had,
and probably surgery. did you have any broken ribs as well?
Probably, dude, but they didn't scan that.
Yeah.
So they just scanned my elbow and my knee. And then, cause that's where all the blood was. That's where all the stuff was. And, so yeah, I busted the caps. Thank God the knee ended up healing by itself with just time and relaxing, taking care of it. Mm-hmm. But my elbow, it had to be pieced together, and there's a gnarly scar, dude. And yeah, that happened.
God.
And then top it off, right when that happened, after the surgery, I got a call from Levi's, and they're like, all right, we got the green light. We're opening the shop in 3 weeks, dude. And so I started Beverly Hills Levi's.
Still messed up.
Dude, I started during COVID with a mask, with a broken elbow cast and a broken knee cast. I don't know how I did that, but it happened, dude. It's crazy.
You should have asked if you could like bring a chainsaw too, because it kind of sounds like you'd have looked like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Dude, that's how it was. And then I was chafing because my leg braced when I was working. Man, it was terrible. And I had gained so much weight because I wasn't moving. Man, I almost quit the first couple of days of Levi's again.
Oh my gosh.
It was rough, dude.
So what happened? Like, were you jumped? Were you just got caught up in the riot? Like,
no. What ended up happening was I was at the top of the staircase, about to go down to the sub, you know, like the metro, the subterranean metro, the underground. And then I don't know what happened. I got nudged. There was a group, but I lost my footing. I tried to catch myself with my bad foot, and because my leg was healing from the motorcycle accident, it buckled. I took the whole staircase, and then, yeah. So I'm not like, no, it's nobody's fault, you know, but yeah, like I lost my footing because of the craziness, and I don't know if I got what happened, but I took the staircase, dude.
Like one flight of stairs or like all the way down?
I don't know. I blacked out halfway, I guess. I just woke up on the ground.
Holy shit, dude. Holy shit.
Yeah, man. So, yeah. And then that was my last surgery on my elbow, and I've been whole ever since. Hallelujah.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, somebody's looking out for you, man.
Yeah, man.
Seriously, like, something is looking out for you. And that's bullshit that they couldn't close up your head. Cause like, I mean, you know how to sew. You could have done it yourself. I mean, shit.
No, because it started healing itself after the 3 days. So I screwed myself.
I know, but you could have closed yourself up because you're a tailor.
Dude, I couldn't even put my food to my mouth at the time. My girlfriend had to feed me.
Oh man, dude, that's incredible. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
I remember that period, because like when we first started talking, you had posted photos of you and the cane and stuff, and I think we got in the conversation that you told me about the accident, but you didn't go into this much detail, obviously. But and then you went like a while later, you went dark completely, and I was like, "Are you okay? Like, I haven't heard from you in a minute. Like, are you all right and stuff?" And you're like, "Yeah, dude, I got into another accident." and that's all I remember. But you never went into like any detail. But that is crazy.
Yeah, man. Wild.
Well, dude. Yeah, somebody's looking out for you, man.
Yeah, thank God.
So, okay. I know we are already 15 minutes over, you know, but this has been an incredible conversation. Are you sober now, or is that still something that you're kind of battling, or like?
So I am in March, I'll have a year sober of sobriety.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was getting bad at the end there. So I had to make a choice, dude.
That's incredible. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. I never thought I could do it. Thank God.
That's great. That's really great.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's good. That's good to hear, man. Well, I always like to ask, you know, I like to talk about life experiences, but at the end of you know, the last question of the podcast, I know we're already 15 minutes over, so you don't have to go too in depth, but I always like to ask the question, if you, knowing what you know now, right, knowing what you know now, having gone through, you know, these two life-threatening situations, you know, finding your passion of fashion design later on in life and finding it in a roundabout way and going through the different things that you've kind of like had to figure out along the way. Knowing what you know now, what would you say to your 13-year-old self about finding your path?
I would let young Brian go through all the pain again.
Okay.
But I would tell him.
Physical, emotional, what type of pain?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah, because I don't know. I was this weird kid at 17. I just wanted to experience everything, dude. My dad tells me this story all the time. I forgot it until he started telling me. It was around the time of all my accidents and my jail time and all that stuff. But he was like, yeah, I remember you wish for it. You always used to tell me you want to experience everything, good and bad. So, as a teen, I love experiencing life. And that was good. That was bad. I used to always say, like, I'll try everything twice to make sure I don't like it. You know, but the only thing I would tell my 13-year-old self is not to be so tragic. And it will all work out. I would say, trust me in this, kid. It's everything's going to work out. So just don't worry at all. You know, because like I look back at my 20s and all that, and I just, my mindset was dark. I was very, I did a lot of self, and I was self-destructive to the 10th power. I don't know. I would tell myself to take it easy on myself a little bit and not to be so tragic, you know? And yeah, just, I don't know. That's it. But I would never tell, but everything I went through, like literally, as cheesy as it sounds, it literally made me who I am. And I could literally talk about every bad point that got me to a good point. And every pile of shit, I always found, you know, a precious nugget of gold. So I don't know. Just thinking different, I guess. I don't know.
That's, I don't know, man. I love that, man. I love that. Well, on that note, man, thank you so much, Brian, for, you know, agreeing to jump on the podcast. And it's been so good to catch up with you. And yeah, for the audience, I know that we didn't talk a whole lot about, it was one of our goals to, we just had too much to talk about this, this go around. We're probably going to have to bring you back on, another time to talk about, you know, a few of the other things. For the audience, if you want to check out, Brian's custom work, you can check him out at Master and Naif,
It's okay. The Saint Salvage one is easier to pronounce.
Saint Salvage.
Yeah, just tell them the Instagram, Saint Salvage.
Instagram, Saint Salvage. That's an ST with salvage with an E.
That's an ST period.
Yeah, salvage. Period. There you go.
Yeah, that's easier. That's easier.
You can find him out there, but he also has a Shopify, which is Master and Naif, which is Master ANDNAIF.com. And his stuff is incredible. It's Japanese inspired. It is East LA. It is Western culture. It is reimagined, upcycled, vintage clothing, graphic tees. Beautiful, beautiful work. So make sure and check him out.
That was beautiful, man. You're gonna make me cry over here.
All right, Brian. Thanks so much.
All right, brother.